Trying to figure out how to explain it to your local nerd? Your translation expert, Benjamin Rockwell, is here with Computer Talk Radio.
A number of different things on tap for this week. I'm going to go through just a few of these. No, I'm going to go through all of them. I do it every time. IT Pro Series, the simple math of when to upgrade a computer. And this applies to all of us. It's not just the workplace. Steve Keske, he's got a question from Lewis. How can we help seniors from being overwhelmed by technology? Marty's going to get with me. We're going to talk about CES and kind of our look at what CES was. And Keith M. Cedor, he's going to talk about his, no, I'm going to talk about my wish list for Apple 2025. He talked about his last week. On the scam series, I'm going to tell you how to protect yourself by developing a challenge response system with your family. And we've got a number of listener questions beyond the one that Steve's going to answer. James, his neighbor changed the Wi-Fi password. What can he do? David, how can we ensure technology doesn't lead us away from God and faith? John, is the flash drive that he got from his car dealership, is it safe? And Mark, balancing desire versus practical decisions of purchasing tech. If you miss any of these different items, you can check out the website at computertalkradio.com. Again, computertalkradio.com. You can also reach out and ask your questions. I welcome all of them. Again, computertalkradio.com. Or you can phone me at 888-NERD. 888. That's 888-637-3888. So CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, or at least that's what it was called for a number of years. Now they want us to just call it CES, whatever. Marty's going to share a little bit later, but this year was very little different from previous years. Okay, there's thousands of new ideas and products, most of which will not really make it to market. New cars, humanoid robots, graphics cards, televisions, robot vacuums, smart glasses, and a bunch more. So much of it is the same as years gone by, and there's too much for most to see. I looked over a number of different things on the news feeds, and while it shows an exciting future ahead with innovation and intrigue, I also can see that many things are never going to see the inside of our homes, our cars, or any of that. Discernment about what is going to really work and what is more hype than real is, well, it's going to be tough. It's going to make the overload of CES into something that I think is going to hurt technology in the long run. What saddens me is that I see a lot of truly cool things that aren't going to get enough attention away from this vast overload that's in Las Vegas to separate truly the wheat from the chaff. We're going to be looking at a lot of different things, but I don't think it's going to work out well for a lot of them. Now, in response to widespread disruptions caused by the CrowdStrike update that happened around July last year, there's new research from a company called PagerDuty, and it reveals that business leaders are really starting to prepare better for future IT outages. The study indicates a shift in mindset, and 88% of the various IT leaders out there that were surveyed, they are expecting another major incident within their own company within the next year. That's a big, huge wake-up call. A lot of people got hit by that CrowdStrike outage, and they don't want to get hit again. The major impact of that incident left millions of devices offline, and business is now prioritizing ongoing preparation for those disruptions. The findings actually show an increased investment in preventative cybersecurity, along with efforts to enhance readiness in the event of potential future outages. These are key things that the industry has needed to wake up to. And we're starting to see a lot more investment in cybersecurity, as well as business continuity plans and all of that. This was an unfortunate incident. The fact that they're going to continue is unfortunate, but the fact that we're preparing now, I think that is a good thing. Meta, aka Facebook, they're dropping their fact-checking after 8 years. The program has come under fire from both sides of the political aisle for being too hard, too soft on various issues. Likewise, in the latest announcement, it came under fire or praise by many news media pundits. They are moving towards the same model. Meta is moving towards the model that X uses, that's formerly known as Twitter. It's called the Community Notes model. This change was attributed to an error rate of as much as 10 to 20% in the previous model. Now, I'm on the free speech side of this debate, not so much thinking of this as left or right or along with any political pundits, what they're telling me. I'm thinking the whole idea of there's a belief in my ideas here that forums that tout themselves as public should allow for free discourse on all of the topics of interest of the day. Whether they're right or wrong, whether they're accurate or not accurate, we need to be talking about them and we need to sort out for ourselves what the truth is. When we allow each other to make decisions about what is true and what is false, then we are all better for it. Yes, this does put an onus on us to actually research things that we're saying, to be willing to back down when somebody says, hey, that's not exactly correct. Look at this stat here. And we all need to be able to dialogue this and even discuss many different originations of these stats. So there you go. Samsung announced a budget phone this week. The Galaxy A16 5G is fairly standard, especially for the price point, but it seems to be good for most of us. The biggest standouts are the ones waking up a lot of people. First off, $200. Okay, I did say budget, yeah, but even still, that's better than half the price of Apple's cheapest iPhone SE, which has a four-year-old chip. Okay, this has an older chip, a weaker chip, but there is something else that really balances this out as well. 6 years of operating system upgrades, which is an amazing commitment in a world where the competition, Apple, has abandoned new features for hardware that is only a year old, or in my case, 2 years old. I'll ask Keith to respond a little bit later on that one. Net neutrality rules continue to be turned on or off depending on the political administrations in power and so forth. The latest is that the FCC lacks authority to implement these rules, and this came from the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Now, this is a politically charged topic, and it has been for as long as I can remember. Personally, I've long leaned towards the idea of government not meddling in the internet more than absolutely necessary, especially in this realm, as the resulting output is too easily manipulated by big tech, who has pushed the hardest for these rules. The rules were supposed to control them. No, why is Google clamoring for this? Facebook and all of them? It doesn't make sense if they're not going to benefit from it. The internet survived and thrived for nearly 20 years before the first rules were put into place. So, yeah, I think we can do without. In the coming weeks, I'm going to outline my thoughts in deeper detail in regards to exactly this. The Los Angeles firestorm has resulted in a wide swath of various tech news of people being supportive or, on the other hand, callous. On the good side, Apple Card users who are impacted, they're going to be able to get a month off just by applying. You have to have, you have to meet certain minimum criteria, but okay. Airbnb also announced a plan. They're going to help house those who are directly affected through free stays at various Airbnbs and more, but there are some caveats. Okay, there's always going to be these caveats. On the other side, TikTok employees who cannot work from home must use up all of their PTO time, their sick time, and so forth, instead of getting a reprieve from whatever bad news they may be experiencing because of these fires. Wow, I don't even know what to say to that. Although TikTok is kind of struggling, and who knows where that one's going to go in the coming months. Coming up next, John had a question for me. He received a flash drive from a car dealership, and he wanted to know, is it safe? And I'm going to unpack a lot of different things in regards to how that works out. Coming up next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
I had a message from John. He wanted to know about a flash drive that was given to him by a car dealership and if it was safe. John reached out to me at ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's ComputerTalkRadio.com. You can do it too. If you've got computer questions, technology concerns, I will answer them. So let's read John's email. I recently got a new, quote, or parentheses, used, and parentheses, car, and the dealership gave me the paperwork on a thumb drive. While I'm 99% sure it's safe, I have yet to copy it over to my computer. Can I safely plug a thumb drive into my computer and let my antivirus scan it? Or when you plug in a thumb drive, would malware execute before my antivirus can check it? In general, what's the best way to handle a thumb drive if you're not sure of the contents? So it's interesting that we're approaching this right now because CES is where I get tons of flash drives. And when I say tons, each time I come back from CES or have come back, I haven't been in a few years and it's not really on my forecast for the coming years, but I come away from there with it just a bag full of those flash drives, and I review a lot of the information across those, and I feel safe because those flash drives have been given to me by the various vendors, and the vendor name is sitting right on there. So if I get something from Samsung, they have their name on the flash drive, and it's usually a very unique-looking flash drive compared to everybody else's. And I go through, and I'll check all of the data on there and look at all of the press releases and things like that. It's part of keeping up with what happened at CES. And I generally trust almost all of those flash drives. There's a couple of them which I look at, and I go, I remember this company. I'm not interested in it. But most of them I will check. Now, I'm getting flash drives from people I don't know and I'm not going to see again. So there is typically a little bit of that nagging question in my mind. Is this safe? The bigger the name, the safer it's going to be. I get something from Microsoft, I get something from Apple or NVIDIA or Sony or whoever it is. It doesn't matter. I'm going to trust them. Some of these little companies off in what we call Eureka Park, or what CES calls Eureka Park, I'm not going to trust them as much. I still generally trust them because, again, it's CES. So in this case, John's experience, he got it from the dealership, the car dealership. We're going to trust them. Why? Because you know where they're at. If you have a problem with your computer right after you bought the car from them, yeah, you're going to be able to talk to them and go, what's the deal here? Generally, they're not going to even do that. We're going to think about where this flash drive came from. If I came across a flash drive in the mall parking lot, or it was sent to me out of the blue, and I have no idea what's on it, I'm not going to trust it. I'm going to chuck it in the trash. The dealership is providing information directly to John. He knows who gave it to him. He knows what they're providing on that flash drive. It's all of the paperwork. This is everything that you've got as far as the car. And this is a way for us to have everything already electronically provided. This is a good direction because a lot of people, yeah, that's paperwork. Do I really want to file a bunch of paperwork or, you know, on this car that I'm never going to look at again for the next 5 years? No, it's going to get lost. It's going to get thrown wherever. So with the dealership, yes, that's great news from the get-go. It's not ever going to be perfect. It is far more safe. It is never 100%. It is never going to be perfect. So in this case, yes, you want to make sure that you are running your malware scanner over this flash drive when you plug it in, and that is okay. That is what is happening here. We have to all run malware scanners on our systems. Every car dealership out there is making enough money to pay for, yes, the malware scanners. You've got a malware scanner. So we can go through. There are a few different things I'm going to give out to everybody. We've already covered the basic, simple, avoid the unknown USBs. I do want you to make sure that your data is backed up all the time. This is my reminder point, and this is for everybody. This is no matter what you're doing, you want to make sure you always have a backup. Make sure your malware is always updated as well. Now, if you have a suspicious thumb drive, you are concerned about this flash drive, but you want to move forward, I want you to think about using an old or spare laptop. Use something that's running a different operating system, the Mac operating system or Linux. These are little end runs around most of the malware. And yes, you're still going to run your malware scanners on a Mac, on a Linux system. Chromebook is another option too, because there's that security through obscurity. Most of the malware out there is not written for Chromebooks. It's not written for Linux, and it's not written for a Mac. It's written for the big dog. Yeah, Windows. So you can use that dedicated device off to the side. I've got a few computers around here. If I'm really concerned, I'm going over to something that's scary, I will use one of those because it is isolated away. It is going to be different. It's going to be something that if I have to start over from scratch, I'm not all that worried about. Next up, scan the drive. Before you open up any files, if you're concerned about it, just run your anti-malware software and scan the entire drive. Most of the different programs out there are going to allow you to check for malicious files without ever executing them. Next up, look for files that are kind of weird named. Some of the different red flags to think about, let's say it's document.pdf.exe. Wait a second, it's got a double extension on there? yeah, that is something that's hiding away, and that could be potentially bad. Also, if it's got an odd name to it, it is like a batch file, .bat or .cmd. Don't open those. .sys. Don't open those. Another thing you can check into is just running a virtual machine. And this is something that's a little bit more for the tech savvy. But that is a different approach to go in, where that flash drive is isolated into that virtual machine. It takes some configuration. It takes some tweaking and weird stuff to do with that. So I've got that down here at the end. Look, all of this, most people actually are truly harmless. Most of the people that are out there, we're not going to have to worry about them. Occasionally you meet somebody with a cold. So your antivirus is much like that hand sanitizer. It's going to help, but you want to think about this all the way along. In this case, John can use that flash drive. I'm 99.99% sure it is going to be safe. We've got those 1 in 1,000 kind of situations where maybe something will go crazy, but not likely in this case. Of course, I've got to tie in some kind of car analogy because that came from a car dealer. So I want you to think of your antivirus as your car's seatbelt. It's critical, but it's not always foolproof. Yes, you can go ahead. You can check that paperwork or the flash drive, but you do need to continue to be careful out there on the information highway. That's something that's incumbent upon all of us. We need to be protecting ourselves as well as the other computers we might eventually be dealing with. So, yes, run a malware software. I strongly suggest that for everyone. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373, 888. That's how you can reach out to us, one of the many ways, and feel free to give me a call. I will answer your computer questions personally. As for now, Keith Emseder joins me. And Keith, one of the things that is going through my mind right now, and this is kind of in the aftermath of what we were talking about last week, the whole idea of Apple and what they're doing and how they feel. Well, you had some directions you wanted them to go in. I'll tell you my big direction that I would like to see for this coming year.
Now, what is that, Benjamin?
I would like to see them support their hardware for a longer term, much like Samsung has decided to do. They just released a brand new phone. This is their in their budget series. And how budget? $200. And they are promising 6 years of upgrades.
Well, I will tell you about
6 years of continued improvements.
You get what you pay for. Now, listen,
This is all about the fact that I want Apple to start supporting their hardware for longer than a year and a half or a year. I mean,
they
like
they do, actually, because here's what I'm going to tell you, Benjamin. Apple actually keeps products in an active status, active and fully supported for 5 years. Apple has three statuses, okay?
No. I'm aware of those.
5 years is the active support status of all Apple products. If a product is older than 5 years but less than 7 years old, it is then considered to be in vintage status.
If it's
older than 7 years old, then it is obsolete.
Okay. So let's talk about this. 100 new features in iOS 18. Name five of them that work on anything that are new features in iOS 18 that will work on an iPhone 15 regular or an iPhone 14 and lower.
Well, I understand the point you're making, Benjamin, but here's the thing. It didn't stop the phone from working. Your phone still does all it ever did when it was brand new. When the iPhone 14
iPhone
13 was brand new, it still does everything it ever did. It didn't stop doing those things. Now, Apple comes along and says, hey, you know what? We've got these new technologies, but they're going to require one of our newer devices to use. So you have a choice. Either everything's hunky-dory and you're status quo and you stay there, or if you want the new features, we offer you a new device.
Yeah, I struggle with this, though, because it's like, okay, for the Mac series, okay, if you have a 24-inch iMac, and it's a year old, the only thing you're going to get from here on out is bug fixes. You're going to get none of the new technology. If you have
Actually, the Mac is behaving a little bit differently. The M-series processors have the ability to do things a little differently. But let's talk about it while we have the conversation going,
I'm saying, though, that they keep selling us on all of these different new technologies. But then in the case of the iPhone, the only new technology, the only new items in the software are geared only for people who bought the 15 Pro series or the 16. And that's abandoning your user base.
This is an area... This is an example where I might be making your argument for you, but do you remember a conversation that we had not too long ago, probably right before the holidays, which may or may not have been on the air? I don't recall, but that's right, folks. We're friends and we're geeks. We talk about tech people not on air together, where we were talking about CarPlay and all the amazing new features where this new improved version of CarPlay was going to overtake all of the displays inside your car. If you had a car that had digital display, analog gauges, and it was going to be supposed to be coming in iOS 17, then it's supposed to be coming in a later version of iOS 18. And you revealed to me that those new features of being able to take over all of your displays and have these really cool Apple gauges and clusters were only going to be if you had a 23 or 24 car or newer, and I've got a 21. Do you remember that conversation?
Yeah.
I am perfectly fine as long as my current CarPlay is not deprecated and takes away features that I've been enjoying for the last umpteen number of years. Last 4 or 5 years, until such time as I say, you know what? I'm ready for a new iPhone so I can enjoy those new features. As long as I don't lose what I have now, I don't see the problem.
The thing is, I want to see Apple move away from what we might think of as the car model, where you get the 2021 car and all of the new features that come along come in the 2022, 23, 24, and you can't get them unless you buy the 2024 car.
But they've made a new feature that has greater power improvements. And they said, you know what? We've got these new features, and we finally got a device that embodies those that power.
But those are incremental. I'm talking, Apple seems to have added new things.
There is an AI
For the rest of the people. For over half of the people that have iPhones, they are rendered software-wise obsolete.
But not because of an artificial limitation. There is an AI engine in the processor.
Oh, no, I get that for the
iPhone 15 Pro and 16 series that requires.
I get that for the AI features, but they stopped developing any other significant features for everybody else. They just dead stop, which, you know, I find that unfortunate. I
get where you're coming from, and I don't think you're wrong for feeling it, but I do disagree with the overall premise. I think, hey, here's this new thing we just came out with, and if you want to use these new features,
any new thing
we just came out with.
Yeah. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Sedor.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The phone number 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-637-3888. Marty Winston joins me now, and Marty, CES was this week, and you're looking, you didn't even go and you're looking tired. What is up with that?
And well, it's remotely contagious now.
Oh, man.
No, I want to talk about more than just what was there. I also want to talk about what we wish we had seen but didn't.
Okay, sure.
CES, do better next year. Robot floor cleaners that occupy a lot less floor space and go a lot longer before nagging us for attention. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yes, yeah.
How about affordable outdoor residential security cameras with telephoto lenses because their radio range never brings their images close enough to the edge of the yard.
Sure, yeah.
Or sometimes you can't even see the mailbox from the last place in Wi-Fi where you can put
it.
How about goods and services that are one-and-done purchases without commitments to forever payments for subscriptions or updating privileges or support or any other excuse?
You know, we've moved so far away from that, and I'm scared that we're not going to go back to that kind of operation. It's unfortunate.
And there's really no need to feed the greed weed that well.
Yeah.
Online, how about online patient care telehealth services that can specify, tell you in advance who you're going to see, their credentials, what it's going to cost, and how much of that your insurance will cover.
Yeah, that would be a beautiful thing. Yeah.
I mean, Hello. How about a policy from Amazon or the other sellers that mandates a high visibility identification for each item they list of each product's country of origin?
Oh, I like the sound of that one. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, it may be a bargain today, but if there are tariffs tomorrow, it's going to be 160% less of a bargain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, if you ever need to replace or buy another or purchase things like filters that you have to add to it because they wear out, that replacement stuff, you won't be making a blind decision if you know where it's all from.
Yeah, yeah, very true.
In car.
Yeah.
Because we know CES is now a technology and automotive show, too.
Yes.
In car, I'd like to see severe weather warnings while you're driving. Okay. I'd like to see in, right? You know, you're about to hit a major storm, pull off in 2 miles and wait 20 minutes and the storm will pass.
Where's the nearest fallout shelter in case of tornadoes and stuff like that?
Yeah, that'll work. Al Sleet, you're hippy dippy weatherman.
Sure. Okay.
In-car monitoring of carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide and oxygen levels.
You know, that is, I love that idea.
And a warning to pull over if it gets out of whack.
You know, we've got all of these different devices in our homes for monitoring that. Why don't we have that for cars?
And the car is smart enough these days to open its own window to exhaust it, not let you start it while it's still bad. You know, all
Of
that.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, in generation two, we can add a warning for flammable gases, combustibles.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Boom. And it's not even a Tesla with a bad battery.
Well, in all fairness, those are Teslas with good batteries. Well, until they caught fire, in which case it's no batteries.
Wouldn't you like to have a smartphone dock that can drive a bigger monitor when the on-screen type, the typography, gets unreasonably small?
Yes. Yeah,
and
I like
how about,
that.
You know, if you're going to support that bigger screen monitor so you can see what's on the phone screen, throw in a keyboard and a mouse interface and maybe one for a stylus.
Sure. Sure.
Right?
I'm digging that. Yeah. All right.
How about a robot for raking, compacting, and bagging leaves in the fall?
I would love to see one of those.
And a toaster that can also... you know, take that frozen bagel up top and heat it just enough to let you separate the halves.
Okay. All right. I'm liking that idea.
And a gizmo to tell you which versions of Bluetooth each of your Bluetooth gizmos will support.
That's going to be a difficult one for anybody because so many people don't even understand. They hear Bluetooth and they just figure, okay, it's just going to work versus they don't realize how many variations and
all that stuff. And perhaps most significantly, CES needs to establish free transportation, accommodations, meals, and individual preference adult beverages for those attending who are with Computer Talk Radio.
I like that last little plug for us. CES is, to me, I mentioned this last week. I'm not enthralled with it anymore.
It's CESterday.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything you've mentioned there, it would be great to see those. I think it would be great to see those at CES. I think it would be wonderful to see any of those outside of CES, just coming forward and saying, hey, we've solved this problem, that problem, rather than us waiting till January to be overwhelmed and disappointed by everything that happens at CES?
Oh, I don't know. I miss the old days of CES when they couldn't do 3D printing and you had to watch the carved and painted balsa wood model of what they are hoping to bring out if enough people seem interested and pre-order them.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, too many prototypes, too many different things that will never see the light of day. Your favorite Eureka Park always comes to mind. And I mean that with all sarcasm.
Eureka Park is Eureka indeed.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. SiteGround.com. The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And they have all kinds of tricks up their sleeves. And I have a solution which I've resisted sharing this for a while, and I don't know why. Partially because I think it sounds kind of cheesy, it sounds kind of ridiculous, and yet I've used exactly that trick, if you will, for probably 30 years now with my wife. We have this challenge response system set up for just a couple of ways for us to authenticate that we're talking to each other. And it's really simple. It's really basic. And this is something that everybody really needs to start doing. Why? Because it involves two pieces of information. And those two pieces of information wind up being an effective authentication. You've seen this in James Bond's movie, GoldenEye. And James Bond says, in London, April's a spring month. And then there's supposed to be, that's the challenge. And then the response is supposed to be something else. The guy goes crazy off of this. Oh, yeah, and what are you, the weatherman? I mean, for crying out loud, you're just another stiff Brit with your secret codes and your passwords. One of these days, you guys are going to learn to just drop it. All right, so the thing is, we've seen this before. We've seen this in many spy movies where one side has a sentence they're supposed to say and the other side has a very specific and odd worded response on the other end. And my wife and I have done this for a while. And I believe that everybody needs to start doing this. Why? Because there are new introductions of AI coming along. And these are coming along, and we've seen scams already where AI-generated voices are pretending to be whatever relative of yours that they are trying to spoof, and they're trying to leverage that against you. They're trying to get you to do something that you wouldn't normally do except for your grandmother, your grandkid, whatever it is. So I'm encouraging you to develop some kind of a system very similar to this, where they answer a question honestly, intuitively, and regularly. You build this on up, this challenge response. And it can be as simple as saying, what's your favorite movie? And they respond with Forrest Gump. although they hate the movie Forrest Gump. I don't know why they'd hate the movie Forrest Gump, but you get that idea. They will be providing that similar challenge response anytime you ask for it. Even though you would find this nowhere in any online activity, this isn't going to be something that they're going to honestly answer anywhere else, or dishonestly. It's going to be just lined up exactly as such. That's going to get you all out of all kinds of different issues with regards to authentication. And it is so important that we start leveraging this challenge response authentication on a regular basis. All of us. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at TheRadioFactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with TheRadioFactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, The Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
Yeah, he's our favorite nerd. Translating technobabble to English, your translation expert, Benjamin Rockwell, is here with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, of course, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That's how you can ask us your questions, your technology concerns. We will answer them, of course. All you need to do is scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we will get back with you. The phone number, of course, is 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Steve Keske joins me now, and he makes good on one of our promises, that of being radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact all of our lives. And Steve, I've got a question from Lewis. He asks, how can we help seniors avoid feeling overwhelmed by technology? He seems to be a younger person from some of the text that he provided, but that was the key question. And I'm thinking you're probably the closest who can really help explain this to the audience.
Who, me?
Yes, you.
Yeah. I guess the best way to do it is actually have classes strictly for seniors now.
Okay.
And, of course, they're on limited budgets, so make sure that it's either free or very low cost.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And I understand some senior centers actually do perform exactly that.
Oh, yeah, and there's a lot of libraries now that are providing
sure,
that.
Sure.
But, yeah, that's the thing. That's the key element in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take it one step at a time.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if they got a cell phone, a smartphone,
yeah,
go into the smartphone
mm-hmm.
and show them how to use it. Step by step.
So you're going to start off with really one device, probably, and then start with probably the basic apps to start off with.
That's correct. And then you go into computers and all the rest.
Mm-hmm. So let's say we start with a smartphone. I know you just recently started with a smartphone. What, about a year ago, right?
That's about right.
Okay. So,
and yes, I can make a phone call.
So what was probably the first thing you sought to learn about the iPhone?
Oh, geez. How to make a telephone call.
Okay.
Pictures.
Okay.
And then you.
Yeah, taking pictures. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you got to get into how can I send a text message versus a phone call?
Sure.
Those type of things. Mm-hmm. And then what can I attach to a text message?
Okay.
All those kind of things. And then I'm still learning more things.
Sure.
And of course, asking, knowing that if you got the right smartphone,
mm-hmm.
that you can ask questions and they can go out to the internet and find out the answers for you.
Sure. Yes. So on the iPhone, you've got Siri, and then over on the Android side, you have things like Google Assistant and so forth. And
yeah.
these are just basic voice assistants that you can ask questions, as you mentioned, and there's a lot of information that's out there. I feel like my mother, she went through a very similar experience where she started off with just basic phone calls, then moved into text messaging, and then started to use Siri on a regular basis for various needs.
Yeah.
So of course, one of the things I would always suggest is making sure that you keep in contact with those senior citizens and provide an ongoing support for them too.
That is true.
What,
and in more of an individual basis than a group basis.
Yeah. So some of these things, of course, can be learned in a group, but so many different language barriers, and I say that because even though we have language barriers between English and Spanish, people don't realize that the language barriers between generations, whether we're talking boomers or Gen X or the millennials or whoever,
yeah.
all of these different generations have different ways of presenting things and retaining those things.
And
so, yeah, go ahead.
And also you have the problem of what kind of disabilities that senior person has. And you have to address those disabilities as you're going through all this training.
Sure. Well, like in your case, you are legally blind. You've got a limited amount of vision. So the approach for you was probably quite a bit different, but focused a lot on those voice activations, a yes. lot of those different interactions that are voice-based.
Yeah. If I didn't have that, I wouldn't. There's so much less I can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that goes true with your computer and you know, internet and all kinds of stuff.
You know, actually, I'm sitting here and I'm recalling that my mother had some difficulties. When I would see her and I would help her with her smartphone, she had an iPhone as well. And when I would help her, she had reading glasses on hand because, yes, there is a vision issue. When we start looking at these smaller screens, you know, people with healthy eyes, you know, they don't have a problem with that. But as we all get older, our vision slowly deteriorates.
I know. I want a nice telephone, like a smartphone, only make it about a
20-inch screen.
20-inch screen.
Yeah, something big, huge, and just not going to fit in any pockets that I have. I don't know. Do you wear cargo pants? Do you have big pockets?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So you could probably handle it, something the size of, well, probably not a 20-inch screen,
but
the iPad mini, probably. Those can fit in some larger pockets.
Yep.
So one of the things, too, that I think about is dealing with the benefits that are going to help daily life, the staying in touch, of course, managing health. There's a lot of different things of asking a senior citizen, what can we do to make things easier, realizing or keeping in mind that they may not be aware that smartphone will have that capability, or the computer, or whatever else. You know, people are not always aware of all of the different features that are there.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And they don't know what they need. So you have to start out slowly. Like, it's like building a house. You got to put down a good foundation and slowly add one block to another, and just keep building it from there.
Sure.
I think home's true with technology.
Yeah, throughout technology.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to make sure that they understand that there are tons of benefits out there.
Oh, yeah.
And this is, you know, people who are senior citizens right now, so we're talking very early Gen Xers and all of the boomers, they did not grow up with technology. They did not inherently learn all of these things in what I would say is more free time that is found in somebody who's a lot younger, you know, the elementary school, middle school, and high school students. They learn, and they also talk to each other a lot
about technology,
about whatever is fascinating to them at the time. So yeah, technology really there. I'm going to close out. One of the big things that comes to mind too is patience. And on both sides, having patience with whoever is learning,
and patience on the instructor,
but also on the other side. And I think working with the senior citizens and encouraging them, building their confidence, and saying, "Look, if you run into problems, I can rescue you." That's a lot of what I do here at Computer Talk Radio. What are your thoughts on that one?
Oh, that one's a good one. I do like having that option.
So I know I've answered some questions for you over the years with tech. And but, of course, if I were to sit down and ask you questions in regards to COBOL and Fortran, you'd probably roll your eyes at me and...
I would not answer your questions.
Of course.
And the first question would be, which version and which operating system are we working with?
Exactly. There is so much to that process of learning and teaching, and I want to encourage everyone, including you, Lewis, on bringing everybody into the new technological future as best you can. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. James reached out to me. I've been using my neighbor's Wi-Fi for years. They changed their password. I'll get into that here in a moment. But first, let's note the website, ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to me. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and I will answer your computer questions and your technology concerns. So James's question, wow, I've been using my neighbor's Wi-Fi for years. They changed their password, but won't give it to me. I can't afford to pay for internet, so what do I do? By the way, I did change James' name. I will protect the innocent and all of that. I struggle with this one because I really do want to go full bore right into this and go, you can't be doing that. I am going to spend a moment, though. Let's treat this head on. Borrowing your neighbor's Wi-Fi with or without permission is like eating their groceries without asking and just continuing. Just because the Wi-Fi is there doesn't mean it's okay. Just because the food is there doesn't mean it's all right to chow down. So they've changed the password. And I'm not even going to worry about why they changed the password. They could have caught on to the piggybacking. They could have just wanted to secure their network better. But it is their password. It is their Wi-Fi. It is their Wi-Fi bill, if you will. It's their internet bill. So let's talk about the solutions. And there are a ton of different solutions out there. They may not always involve being where you're at, being at your home. Let's start off with the easy one. Your phone probably has hotspot capabilities, so you can use your phone. You can get a mobile hotspot. And I'm going to lean into this next one here. I also understand that some libraries out there are giving out portable hotspots for people to have temporary internet access at a very reasonable rate or even at no cost whatsoever. And that moves us right into public Wi-Fi. And free Wi-Fi has been around for a long time, and this has been, it started off for me, I first saw it in coffee shops, and then we moved into various restaurants and then libraries, and even today, there are parks out there that offer free Wi-Fi, and they're looking to enable all of us to join the information superhighway. And that is a good option to go with. And you can check into options through your city. Believe it or not, there are initiatives out there to provide free or low-cost internet to residents, especially when they are low-income households or they're students. So check into options for that. There is a government initiative that offers discounted internet services to qualifying households. It's called the Affordable Connectivity Program. And you can check into your local internet service provider, whoever they may be, to see if they have a program for people who are having financial hardships, they're low budget or rather low income. And there's a few different options out there. So look around for that. These are all workarounds. I am going to tell you that we need to start thinking about a lot more of the long-term solution beyond that. This is going to, what I've said so far, this is going to get you past a matter of a few weeks, a couple of months maybe. But I'll tell you, everybody today needs to be thinking about the internet. They need to be thinking about connectivity. And if that means you reprioritize your budget, you revisit all of your different expenses and see if there's something you can cut out on a temporary or even permanent basis, this is going to be really ideal. I will tell you that there are some very basic plans available through all of the different internet service providers. You don't have to have, okay, I have gig up and gig down where I live. I can afford it. It's not that much over the smaller plans, but I pay for the premium plan. Actually, I don't even pay for the premium plan. The premium plan is 2 gigabit up and 2 gigabit down. I don't need that because I have plenty of speed already, and that's fine. But you can look into a situation. Many of the cable companies have a tiered service provision, a selection of offerings. You go for something that is maybe 20 megabit download and 2 megabit upload, or 30 or 40 by 3 or 4, whatever it is. You know, you look at the options there. They're going to be less, And this is something that you're going to really need to look into. You need to plan that out. And if it's a matter of giving up, Starbucks a few times a month or something like that, shift your budget around. This should be a priority item in your budget these days. We've always talked about, as just a generalization, a lot of people have talked about, you have to have a good budget in place. You have to be thinking about where your money goes. This is part of adulting. This is part of just life. You need to prioritize. Maybe eating out less. Maybe, and I'm speaking to this without really going into whatever it is that's going on in James' life. I don't know where he's at. I just know that it's his neighbor. So we think about all of the different things that go into our and out of our household budget, and we need to prioritize internet over cable TV, for instance. Do I need HBO and Showtime and all of these different things? Do I need five different streaming services? And the reality is, no, you don't. You need to figure out what is not needed, what is capable of being removed, what is the different sacrifice you're going to give up, or sacrifices that you're going to give up, so that you can keep pace with knowledge and information and technology. And does that mean you're going to go and take on a part-time job? Do you go on out and perhaps barter for something? You work out some of the skills that you do have off of the site. You know, taking on just a little bit more income may also help. And I know that I don't know the situation, so I can't feed all of the different ideas. But we do come across this on a regular basis, as far as we need to think about what is worth paying for and what is not worth paying for. The bottom line, the real bottom line here is you've been benefiting from however you got to the password to your neighbor's Wi-Fi. You've been benefiting for quite a while, and that isn't a solution. That is something that you've done and probably shouldn't have done. It's time to find your way forward. It's a matter of the ties have been cut, and it's time to move on. I would not go to them and say, hey, you've disconnected, you've changed the password, so I'm hoping you can help me out for a little bit longer. They do not do that. You've got enough options that I've given here, whether we're talking free or low cost, to really get you moving forward online without relying on your neighbor, who isn't there to support you. Whether we're talking about your internet or their refrigerator or whatever it is, investing in your own connection to the internet, to the information superhighway, however modest you get, is going to bring you independence and perhaps peace of mind, because you know that the signal is going to be reliable. It's going to stick around. Look, I know this is going to feel daunting, but staying connected doesn't mean you have to stay stuck. And that's important. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory. Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Mark's question, it kind of hits home for me. How can I balance my desire to stay current with technology while avoiding the constant pressure to upgrade? Mark reached out to me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. Wow, I wish I had the answer for this. I wish I could balance it better. Again, the question, how can I balance my desire to stay current with technology while avoiding the constant pressure to upgrade it? And that came in from Mark. Like, technology, it's like a river. It's constantly flowing, and there are new waves that are just continually, it's more like the ocean, and new waves are just rolling in, and constantly. But just as it's important to stay grounded, it is also important, it's crucial to maintain that balanced approach to new gadgets and updates. I mean, I would love to dash on out and buy every single thing that I see that's cool. It's ironic that we're answering this right at the end of CES. But, you know, there's that constant struggle. Well, one of the things that I've done over the years is I've set kind of a timeline where if I decide I'm going to buy something, this is really cool tech, I do a couple of things. And in that timeline, I set aside 30 days and I wait that 30 days before I decide I'm going to buy it. I do my research in the meantime, and my research looks for the ups, the pros, the downs, the cons, and I try to decide if I need this actual item or I simply desire it because it's cool. And that is key. You need to make sure that the new tech purchases you bring in are really necessary for life or work. They're not just a trendy thing. They're not this cool, shiny thing. And that is a key thing right up front. I evaluate the decision. I evaluate the product and I go, is this going to be something I'm going to stick with for the long term? I've had so many different tech items where I've received them and I've had them for a matter of days. And then I go, I'm spending too much time with this. I'm spending too much obsession with this, or I'm no longer interested. And I'll tell you, the MetaQuest goggles, I have had this desire in my brain to pick up one of these for the longest time, and I know it's going to happen. I'm going to try them on. I'm going to use them, and within a matter of weeks, they're going to wind up on a shelf, and I'm not going to use them. There are things where I've done that with so many different tech items. There are things which I haven't done that with, and there's that balance, and you've got to think about that in your 30 days. Next up, budgeting. I do set a budget for the year, and I stick to that budget, and usually I arrive under that budget. For the last number of years, I've been arriving under that budget because I've been applying that thought process of waiting and thinking about whether this is a need or a desire, whether this is something I need to know or something I think is, again, shiny. Ooh, cool. It looks neat. So sticking with a budget is a key thing. Do not roll over that budget. You can increase it if you've got additional money at the end of a year. Okay, next year I'm going to up my budget by $200 or whatever. And that is a key thing there. Look to see if you can maximize the use of your existing technology. Keeping your current devices up to date with software and updates to extend their life. I've been on a two-year rotation with the iPhone for the longest time. And I'm actually right at that point where I've actually looked at it and I'm going, my iPhone has been doing quite well for a while, and I have no idea, I have no desire for the new Apple Intelligence. So I'm not upgrading on this cycle, especially since there aren't any major things there. So I'm maximizing this by extending this life for at least I'm looking at the next year. So that will save me, if you think about it, split across a year or 2 years, it'll save me $500 for this year to put into other budget areas. I want you to think about quality over quantity. Invest in fewer items. Ditch the gadgets. Don't pick up these crazy gadgets. Think about the quality, the reliable, useful technologies that are going to meet your needs. I want you to think about practicality. I want you to think about value. I want you to think about all of the different things that are there. And the sooner you can establish whether that is practical and all of the and quality, I think that's going to really help offset a lot of this approach here. You do need to think about long-term impacts, and that kind of goes back to that 30-day thing where I think about, am I going to use this? Am I going to use this for a long time? Is this going to be of value? Or is it just going to satisfy a very short-term want? When you're looking to cross the river and purchase something, going back to that initial analogy, well, I guess I did migrate to ocean. Look, with this, balance is going to be key. And you're going to have to set where that balance is going to be. You need to evaluate your needs against your wants. You need to be thinking about, is this a thoughtful decision, or is this like picking up the candy bar as I'm going through the checkout line at my local Kroger's or whatever grocery store you go to? If you approach it from this direction, I think you're going to be able to stay mostly current with technology without being swept away by the desires and the advertising and all of the different drivers that keep you into this constant purchase cycle. I hope this helps, but that's kind of how I look at it. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and so much more. We all have computers sitting in front of us if we are dealing in the workplace, most of us at least. Yes, there are people who don't touch computers but a few times a day. What I'm going to relate to you is information in regards to if you own a company, if you are a user, a computer user in a company, and that is all about the simple math of doing upgrades to your computers. And this is going to be simple math, and I'm going to do calculations for you all the way along through here. And we hear about Moore's Law. Moore's Law is a nice, simple law that says computers double in speed and capacity every 2 years. And that is exciting. And it doesn't always serve for great money decisions, but it does serve as a good guideline for us to start thinking about when do we upgrade computers. Now, if you're a company owner, this is something that you should be really paying attention to. Even if you are just one of the end users in a company, you are utilizing a computer that's sitting right in front of you. And if it's getting old, it's long in the tooth, you're going, you know, this is crawling. I need a faster computer. I'm giving you information right now that allows you to take this information, what I'm going to talk about, to your boss and explain to them how there is cost savings for most upgrades. Now, if you have a computer that is, we'll call it 6 years old, and you have to wait an average of 5 minutes extra each day for your computer over the new one, you are cutting into the company's money. Time is money, right? We've always heard this, and the reality is, yes, it is. I want you to consider how long you wait for your computer. How long does it take to boot? Does it take 5 minutes? Does it take 3 minutes? Maybe it takes 1 minute. You've got an updated computer that's running a solid state drive, and it's got a lot of different things along there. Great. If it's 1 minute boot time, great. But if it's getting up there to the 3 minutes, 5 minutes, then let's start attaching numbers to this. So let's attach just a matter of a couple of minutes there for your computer boot time. And loading Word, that may be a matter of 30 seconds. It may be a matter of 5 seconds. Loading up Chrome, whatever your browser is, you may be utilizing Microsoft Edge. It doesn't matter. But it may be a matter of 15 seconds. It may be 5 seconds. Loading up your email, loading up whatever programs you're dealing with. As long as they are locally based, they're going to have some level of a lag time for the computer to go out to the hard drive, to load that computer into memory, to do all of the processing that it needs to do with the CPU and everything like that. So I usually look at the boot time and then I triple it. I say if it's a 1 minute boot time, then it is all of the other things are going to fall into place behind that. If it's a 5 minute boot time, I'm really going to start questioning that computer. So I attach a simple number to this, and I look at it as 5 minutes per day. If I can save you 5 minutes per day, and this is down to a business decision. This is for business owners to translate into their employees, but we can do this personally ourselves when we're talking about our home PCs. This is all the way throughout all of this. If you can get back 5 minutes a day, how much does that restore into your productivity, your strength, your things that you're doing of what you need or what you like, whatever it is, then we start restoring some balance. We start realizing what the value is in upgrading a computer. If you make $20 an hour, that 5 minutes of computer slowdown costs you a matter of $1.66 a day. Okay, that sounds like nothing. But let's talk about in the business world. in the business world, we're using the computer 8 hours a day. I'm going to tell you, you're going to save more than 5 minutes with a brand new computer. It's all in those small little chunks of time. But let's simply talk about 5 minutes a day. 200 work days in a year by $1.66, that's about $333 a year, $1,000 in a year, or 3 years rather. Sorry about that. That's a lot of money. It is crazy math to say that you're going to save $300 if you purchase a computer every 2 years. You know, but it's not crazy to note that you're saving yourself cash if you upgrade when your computer is slow. There's an easy thing to think about. If your computer is 2 years old, maybe not going to be all that great unless you are a serious power user. But if your computer is 4 years old, there's going to be a lot of time that's restored back to your day. If it's 6 years old, there's a lot of time that's going to be restored back to that day. And you just have to start doing that number calculation of how much money are you saving in a day when you upgrade the system. And there's a lot of fuzzy math that's going to have to happen beyond that. But we start having to think about, why am I dealing with a 10-year-old computer when I can do so many things so much faster? It's a low expense to the company. It's a low expense to us when we start translating it into how much we make every hour. What are you waiting for? This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com. S-I-T-E. Ground.com. For your web hosting needs. SiteGround. David had us a great question, and it's somewhere here in this email. How can Christians like us ensure that technology doesn't lead us away from God, but instead strengthens our faith? And he knew I was Christian. I talk about it regularly here, sometimes a little bit more, sometimes a little bit less. But this is a technology show. But at the same time, technology, like fire, can be a helpful tool, or it can be a dangerous distraction. It all depends on how we use it. So I do believe in the idea of ensuring that tech use aligns with my faith, it aligns with what I believe are the right moral and proper uses. And I believe that ensuring that is crucial in staying connected with my faith, with God, with all that I do. So there are a few things I would suggest. First off, setting boundaries for tech use. And this is applicable for all of us. We need to be establishing limits on our own screen time, the types of content that we consume, and we need to ensure that technology does not overshadow time with, well, with God, but also with loved ones, with anything that is really important to us. It's very easy for us to get lost in doom-scrolling Facebook, to spending hours on end on YouTube, and we need to set specific boundaries. And when we find that we're getting out of control, we need to implement new boundaries, more boundaries. Additionally, I believe in faith-based tools And there are many different apps and platforms designed to really enhance spiritual growth. And I know that there are some out there that aren't believers, but you can still apply this to some of the things that you're doing. A matter of in the faith-based world, I would say Bible study tools and devotionals and prayer reminders. If you are not faith-based, and that's okay, you can utilize that for quotes and studies that go in directions that help you become a better person. And then lastly, we always need to be evaluating our intentions, and we need to regularly reflect on whether our use of technology is, well, from the Christian basis, glorifying God or distracting from God's purpose in your life, but even for all of the rest of the people out there that might be listening that aren't faith-based, you need to be reflecting on your usage of technology and how that is improving your life, improving your circumstances. And there's a lot here. There's a lot that I want to encourage everyone to think about, to think about the balance of technology in your life. Just as fire can provide warmth and light when used wisely, technology can strengthen faith and your life and everything that it really is important to you when you approach it with intentionality, with purpose, with a design that you control. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at TheRadioFactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with TheRadioFactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, The Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.